Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including DeGracier Daniels, Erwin Sturr, and Ken Hayes. Coming up on DTNS, Section 230 hangs in the balance of sorts. Do we need AR laptops? And Dr. Nikki Ackermans has the latest on smell-o-vision. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, May 18th, 2023. From Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
From lovely Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Rich Straffolino.
And from Sweet Home, Alabama, I'm Dr. Nikki Ackermans.
And the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Good stuff. We're all here in various parts of the world. Nobody's having any tornadoes, so to speak. You know? Let's see how we fare by the end of the show. But first, let's start with some quick hits. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte signed a law making it illegal to distribute TikTok in app stores within the state. The bill bans downloads of the app, but doesn't touch on app updates or web access. App store operators face a fine of $10,000 per violation per day, though citizens won't face fines under that law, which goes into effect on January 1st, 2024. And even after that, people in Montana can continue to use TikTok if they already have it on their devices. TikTok says it will fight the ruling, but didn't announce definite plans for a lawsuit. Internet Trade Association NetChoice, which is fighting laws regulating speech in Texas and also Florida, called the Montana law unconstitutional. Governor Gianforte also directed the state's chief information officer to ban Telegram, WeChat, the shopping app Temu, and ByteDance-owned CapCut on government devices as well.
At its YouTube Brandcast event, a can't-miss event, YouTube announced it will start running 30-second unskippable ads before top-performing content when watching it on a connected TV. These ads will be available in YouTube Select, which targets the top 5% of content on the platform. So this will be ads for top performing content. There's a reason for the new ad format, because it turns out 70% of YouTube Select impressions come from TV. So the top content is getting watched on TVs, and they want to put unskippable ads in front of it. YouTube will also start testing ads that show up when you pause video.
NVIDIA launched its mid-range GPUs based on the Ada Lovelace architecture. The good news, no price increase over the previous generation. The less good news is that the cards only offer mild performance increases. The RTX 4060 Ti starts at $299 for 8 gigs of RAM, coming on May 24th. The 16 gig 4060 Ti costs $499. The $299 4060 will go on sale in July.
Well, we know how the cookie will crumble, or at least the third-party variety. Google announced some plans to roll out its privacy sandbox, its replacement for third-party cookies. This is designed to group users into cohorts based on browsing patterns while letting users manage their interests and is designed to provide greater privacy and anonymity. In early 2024, Google will migrate 1% of Chrome users to Privacy Sandbox and disable third-party cookies. Google says this will provide real-world data to assist developers in getting ready for the change, which is still planned for the second half of 2024. The company consulted with the UK's Competition and Markets Authority on the rollout plan to, you know, get ahead of regulatory headwinds on the rollout.
A lot of people saying 1%, that's nothing. When you're Google, that's something. OpenAI published a ChatGPT app on the iOS App Store in the U.S., offering almost the same functionality as the web version, but supporting speech input using OpenAI's Whisper speech recognition system. The app will roll out to other markets in the coming weeks. But don't worry, OpenAI ended their blog post announcing it with, P.S., Android users, you're next. ChatGPT will come into your devices soon.
Ominous.
Phew.
No, we're good. All right. Let's talk politics. The U.S. Supreme Court issued its rulings in two cases that affect Section 230. That's the safe harbor law in the U.S. We've talked about this on DTNS quite a bit in the past. But Rich, let's talk about the first situation that is unfolded.
Yeah, so let's break down Twitter versus Tomna. The court dismissed the allegations that Twitter violated the U.S. Anti-Terrorism Act by failing to remove posts before a deadly attack. Justice Clarence Thomas wrote the opinion for the unanimous decision, so everybody's on board, saying that Twitter's failure to police content was not a, quote, affirmative act. He made comparisons between Twitter and things like email and cell phone service, pointing out that phone carriers are not liable for illegal drug deals made over their phones, just using the infrastructure. Specifically regarding Twitter, he wrote, there are no allegations that defendants treated ISIS any differently from anyone else. Rather, defendants' relationship with ISIS and its supporters appears to have been the same as their relationship with their billion plus other users. Arm's length, passive, and largely indifferent. So basically, Twitter is not preferencing that content in any way, just treating it the way it would any other. He even touched on the main issue from the other case, algorithmic recommendations. He wrote, quote, the algorithms appear agnostic as to the nature of the content, matching any content, including ISIS's content, with any user who is more likely to view that content. The fact that these algorithms match some ISIS content with some users thus does not convert defendants' passive assistance into active abetting. So again, this kind of distinction, between active assistance, we saw affirmative act earlier, and then kind of passive business as usual actions here. So as we said back in February, after the oral arguments, the decision on Twitter would have an effect on Google. So Sarah, can you break down how that went?
I can. Okay. So in Gonzalez versus Google, the plaintiff alleged that YouTube was on the hook for terrorist content because its recommendation algorithm constituted editorial selection and therefore should be considered direct speech and not covered by Section 230 protections. In an unsigned opinion, the court wrote that the, quote, liability claims are materially identical to those at issue in Twitter. Also saying, since we hold that the complaint in that case fails to state a claim for aiding and abetting, it appears to follow that the complaint here likewise fails to state such a claim. And we therefore decline to address the application of Section 230. So the claims in Gonzalez were also dismissed.
What stood out for me looking in some of the either back from the oral arguments or now looking and looking at those from the lens of this ruling is kind of seems like a universal agreement among the justices or a lot of the justices kind of across the ideological spectrum in that they really think this is something Congress needs to take care of. But at the same time, that this law is kind of exceeding whatever, like this law is providing more coverage than it was originally intended back, in 1996, when the Telecommunications Decency Act was first passed. So this interesting act, but you know, we saw statements from back in February, Justice Kagan, and Justice Kavanaugh, basically saying like, this really needs to go to Congress for, you know, to actually like clarify where we think the line for liability should be in a lot of these cases.
Nikki, I don't know how much you've been following the stuff, but what is your take on where we are today?
I mean, I've been following it very lightly on the surface, so my take may not be super insightful, just that like it's complex and it'll be interesting if it does go to Congress, because we saw what happened with TikTok that nobody really knows what they're talking about. So it's a little bit worrisome in that aspect, but I tend to agree that like the platform can't control every single thing that people are saying on there. And so.
Right. And that's what every platform will tell you, right? Is like, we can't possibly do this. I thought Justice Thomas's notes that, you know, putting Twitter in a different category from something like email or cell phone service, where, I mean, who are you going to sue? Who are you going to be made liable for this sort of thing, can be very convoluted. That said, you know, platforms have been pushed towards doing more of this for some time now.
Yeah, this doesn't undermine 230, but it really just sidesteps the issue and really points the finger
the fact that like we don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting in the first case, the Twitter versus Tomnet case, in that they basically say like using the infrastructure of these platforms does not constitute active abetting, right? So like it sets a very high bar for being like, you have to if you're going to sue, especially under the U.S. Anti-Terrorism Act, you're going to have to show that there was some sort of recommending content or using their services, to say that it's not enough for a failure of moderation, right, for this content to be available. It's more that it has, you know, there has to be something beyond that, something more active. I think Justice Thomas was very clear on that. All right. Well, one of the big stories that we've been covering over the past couple of years really are the big promises of augmented reality. Many headsets released and speculated have promised all sorts of things. One of the big ones, though, the ability to eliminate fixed screens, kind of using AR for your screens. We've seen AR and mixed reality headsets from Microsoft, Meta, Magic Leap, and companies that don't start with M that offer this kind of functionality. Startup Sightful is taking this to a little bit of another level with their new Spacetop device, described as an augmented reality laptop. They're claiming the first. I don't think anyone's disputing them on that one. Basically, it's a laptop, no screen. Instead, it has a hardwired set of customized and real glasses that the company claims offer a 100-inch equivalent screen. Inside the laptop, it offers 2020 Android flagship specs. The SoC is a couple years old, and it's running a custom Spacetop OS. Didn't find a lot of details about if that's Android or something else underneath here. You know, Nikki, the idea of, hey, let me throw on some glasses. I have my own private 100-inch screen. Does that seem more appealing than, I don't know, a 13 or 15-inch laptop?
You know, I feel like we might run into the Google Glass problem, where it's just like people don't like wearing stuff on them. I don't know. I might be wrong, but like I don't necessarily want to wear glasses for my office all day. I feel like that'll give me a headache. Like when I'm going to watch 3D at the movie theater. I could be totally wrong, and this might be way better than a screen, but it feels gimmicky right now, and I'd be interested to see where it's going.
You know, so, okay. You know, I love VR, AR. I want it to succeed. I think
I want it to be good, right? That's
yeah. I there are certain use cases that I think work really well. As far as I don't know, replacing my laptop, ooh, hard sell. But you know, if I'm thinking of my screen is, you know, what I'm wearing on my head. Let's just say that I'm fine with that. You know, I'm gonna have to have a keyboard of some kind or some extremely good within the VR experience keyboard. Can I work? Can I use less space in my house? You know, is this something that can be put away more easily? You know, laptops are, you know, we're all used to that. So it's like, I mean, a laptop isn't taking up a lot of space. You know, if you're using some sort of a situation where I'm using now, I'm like, I got a big desk. Yeah. I have all sorts of things. So that would be different. But something that, and also, I mean, call me crazy, but when I, you know, crane down at my laptop all day, every day, sometimes I feel pretty crappy at the end of the day, physically, you know, my neck hurts, that sort of thing. Could this be an ergonomic solution for some people?
A good way to sell it.
Well, and an ergonomic and a privacy setting, too, because I could imagine, you know, like they, you know, there are screen protectors of this day that'll limit your field of view to like basically right in front of you. So if you're, you know, you're working on sensitive stuff in public or,
on a plane,
you throw on these glasses, nobody can see you. That being said, one of the things that I've always loved this idea is going back to like the HoloLens, like, oh, man, we just throw screens everywhere and, you know, you can be totally untethered. But the key is the field of view, and the Verge's Monica Chin notes, she had some hands-on time with this, that the field of view, you can't see the whole 100-inch screen at any one point when you're like at a regular working distance from the laptop. Mm-hmm. So then you're like, she had instances where she couldn't find the mouse pointer, you know, because it was at a part of the screen that she couldn't see and stuff like that. The other aspect of it is it's 1080p resolution, which is good, but that's the max you're ever going to get. So if you're looking at the whole 100-inch screen, it's a 100-inch 1080p screen. That's where a lot of these fall down. We saw this with the Meta Quest Pro and some of that stuff. Like, there's only so much real resolution you have, even if you virtually have this giant screen. Like, actually using it because you don't have that resolution gets a little tricky.
I mean, I don't know. 1080p sounds great to me, but maybe that's because that's all I know.
Yeah.
Well, but like, I think about it. I have a 65-inch 4K TV in my living room. But like, if I'm at a working distance of that I would work at a laptop, I imagine I would, you know, like, depending on how many things I was trying to have, if I'm trying to have up like four different windows, like the whole idea is you're replacing multi-monitor setups with this. I feel like that would get to you after a while at 1080 at 100 with added in the boxed in effect, you know, with the field of view. Again, this sounds like it's very early access, like it's a wired connection to these third party, you know, AR glasses. So who knows if this, you know, when this ships as a product, if there's any advancement on that in terms of that kind of stuff. So,
right.
I like the idea. I do like the idea of let's use this to expand the work surface. I just think, I don't know if this is the thing we've been seeing from Siteful right now.
Well, I bet that many people in our audience think something or other about this exact idea. Do you want your next laptop to be VR? And that's what you do. If so, email your thoughts to us, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
All right. For over a century, movie theaters, inventors have all been toying with the idea of technology to release aromas, you know, things that you smell, aimed to specific sequences during a film so the audience could smell what was happening on screen. I mean, olfactory senses are a pretty big deal. The most famous was the Smell-O-Vision technology introduced in the 1960s movie Scent of a Mystery. Mm-hmm. Well, a team at the City University of Hong Kong have developed a lightweight, flexible, and wireless olfactory interface for use with VR experiences to deliver, hopefully precisely, smells such as lavender, pineapple, or green tea to users at appropriate times. So, you know, it makes somebody feel something. So, Nikki, you've been following the story. Explain to us what they are doing.
Yeah. So, like you said, Smell-O-Vision in the 60s wasn't, I wouldn't know if we would call it tech. Some of their solutions were putting a wad of cotton that was soaked in perfume and sticking it under the seat of the cinema, or pumping perfume into the ventilation system, which people said made them confused more than anything else. Overall, it was kind of a bust, but kind of remains in this sort of fixed in glass sci-fi ideas. Personally, since forever always wanted to have some kind of smell recorder and emitter system. Like I've always dreamed of this. This is why I put the story up here. But like every time I make fresh baked cookies, I want to text someone with the smell of the cookies. Why can't we do this? It doesn't seem that hard, right? But so I'm a little bit skeptical about this because we haven't done it yet. But so what are these people doing? So I will explain. This week, an article in Nature came out by engineer Xingo Yu and the colleagues at the University of Hong Kong, which developed this lightweight, flexible olfactory interface that should be delivering smells to VR users. They cite being able to emit smells, like you said, lavender, but also things like durian, coconut Ooh, durian. Milk, Ooh. Pancake, and mojito. So they went a little crazy with their smell testing there. Yeah. But basically how it works is that you've got like a thick silicone Band-Aid type thing under your nose, and there's little paraffin wax pads in there that are heated. They contain the odor, and they're heated by an electrode to melt at certain temperatures, and then they'll release an odor straight into your nose. Mm-hmm. It actually has two versions. So it's got this sort of Band-Aid sized version, and then it's got a bigger one that's more like a face mask. So the Band-Aid one allows you to emit only two choices of odors, and the bigger one has about 9. And they say that you can combine all these odors separately into about 30 different smells. I don't know what happens when you combine durian and coconut milk, but I don't know if I want to know.
Magic.
So Nikki, I mean, hearing all of this, I'm like, this is interesting. You know, I mean, sense of smell for many of us is like, ooh. That's how you remember a memory.
Yes.
You know, that's how you were catapulted back to 10 years ago at a certain time where you were driving down the road, you know, so what is the goal?
They have one of their main goals is selling it as VR. They do try to broaden it out, and they say we could try and use this for applications that involve evoking emotions, like you said. Which is deeply connected to memory in the hippocampus in the brain. And I actually covered this in my last class, so I'm like all up to date on it right now. But they're suggesting this as an aid for depression. For example, you know, trying to evoke positive memories to see if that would do anything. They also said that it could be a great tool for avoiding smelly environments. So if you work at a sewage plant, maybe you could get one of these, stick it under your nose. They also are trying to miniaturize the system and make it about 10 times smaller in future iterations, because it is still, I think from the design right now, it looks really not really practical.
Yeah, like imagine not a something thick you want to wear on your face. Maybe you have to.
Yeah. Nikki, the face mask is okay, but yeah.
What does the response time look like for this? Cause I know like smell just doesn't like travel the same, like, you know, light, we can turn on a light and it's like immediately hitting our eye. Like what,
yeah.
Like, how fast does that get around?
So they managed to make it quite fast because it's directly under your nose. They say it's about a second and a half, which is pretty good considering until now any applications like this have just been like really miniaturized perfume bottles that'll basically like spritz something into your nose. Whoa. But this is actually melting and releasing odors. They didn't really clarify, but I imagine you would have to replace the paraffin eventually because it evaporates. So looks like, again, this is kind of just like the AR goggles in the sense that, like, it seems cool. Maybe it'll go somewhere. I feel like I'd be down to test this, but I don't know if we're there yet.
At CES, they had, like, I think it was Toshiba had these very interactive like VR suits, right? Where it's like every element, you know, you could have a chest thing and arm thing so you could feel different, you know, to add that sense of touch. And I could see next year, you know, building on this tech and having, because they already have like this crazy mask and stuff like that. So you get a face capture and stuff like that too. So I could imagine them adding the smell-o-vision, but it's the therapeutic stuff, I think, that really fascinates me because you're absolutely right. Like that sense of smell to put you in a time and place. Like I know I am there with certain things where I'm like, oh, I'm back in the NICU. This is like, I'm about to cry now or something like that. Like,
and Nikki,
it happens real fast.
I had never, besides nostalgia, until you said like this could combat something like depression, you know, or, you know, other, you know, issues where, you know, PTSD. People are trying to kind of, get out of that. This makes a lot of sense.
You gotta be careful with this kind of thing. So I'm interested to see where they go with this, but yeah, interesting.
Well, speaking of going somewhere, you're gonna love this one, Nikki. North Carolina-based company Pairwise has edited the DNA of mustard greens, engineering them to be less bitter than the original plant. If you are familiar with mustard greens, you might like them raw. Many people say, no, can't do that. So it's the first CRISPR edited food on the U.S. market. That's notable. Pairwise says it hopes that consumers could start choosing something like these less pungent greens over less nutritious options like iceberg and butter lettuce. Not to throw all the other lettuce under the bus, but it turns out the mustard greens just have a lot more vitamins in them. So, you know, the Pairwise is saying you should eat more of it. If you don't like it, we're going to help you. The greens will initially be in select restaurants and outlets in the Minneapolis, St. Paul region, St. Louis, Springfield, Massachusetts. Pairwise says it plans to bring them to grocery stores this summer. Didn't have a lot of details on that, but said likely in the Pacific Northwest. Always a good place
for the vegans.
Sort of things. Now, Pairwise also says after tackling mustard greens, they would like to improve fruits, creating seedless blackberries, pitless cherries, for example. How do we feel about this?
I like this because people freak out about this kind of thing when this is just accelerated natural selection. Like, you could have bred this out of mustard greens. Part of me is like, if you don't like mustard greens, don't eat mustard greens. But apparently they're more nutritious. So, you know, you have it in here, like, just so you know, these aren't GMOs, genetically modified organisms. That is made by adding genetic material from a different organism into this organism.
Right. And that, you know, people get a little weirded out about that sometimes.
Yeah, which they don't really have to. I think the only danger that this would have is if they're planting this somewhere and the seeds escape and cross-pollinate with other seeds of mustard greens, you might get some not spicy enough mustard greens. But it's not going to go in and CRISPR your skeleton or whatever, so don't worry about that part.
Now, Rich, I don't know how you feel about mustard greens or salad in general. I mean, I'm a salad fan. I'll eat all salad.
I love mustard greens.
Me too. You know, when they use the example of like, maybe it could, you know, take the place of iceberg lettuce. I'm like, iceberg lettuce has no taste at all. Okay.
But Pairwise, do not come for my butter lettuce. Okay, we are going to have a
butter
fight.
Lettuce is fire.
Take your iceberg. That's fine. We're good. We have peace there. But don't come for my butter lettuce.
But I mean, if you're someone who says like, I love iceberg lettuce, don't. That's not what this is about. This is about making people who, you know, maybe, I don't know. I mean, let's use the, you know, term
more
broccoli.
Accessible lettuce.
More accessible lettuce. Hey, exactly. Accessibility lettuce. Say,
like if they could, you know, I'm thinking like kale, for example, you know, characteristically very bitter or something like that. If they could do something like that and you could, you know, it makes it easier for some people to enjoy it. That's great. Where they need to go, though, cilantro. Okay, for the people, the non-cilantro
Rich,
if they can breed, you know, make a breed
get emails
of this,
about this one.
They can CRISPR the cilantro to make it non-soapy for the soapy cilantro people.
Are you a soapy cilantro person?
I am not. I love the cilantro. I will just eat a sprig of it.
But
right
people
now,
do
with
yeah.
my butter lettuce.
Yeah.
my butter.
You know what? That is a great use for this.
That's what I'm
make
saying.
Make cilantro not taste like soap.
There we go.
And make everybody have a better Taco Tuesday.
I'm surprised they didn't start with that, honestly.
Cilantro piece. Pairwise, yeah, no, we're counting on you.
No crap. All right, let's check out the mailbag. Okay, so this one comes from Jeremy talking about companies who are trying to put VR in cars. Not the car companies themselves, but we spoke with Allison Sheridan yesterday about Meta specifically saying, yeah, people want that. Jeremy says, autonomous. Customers have to do something when they're in cars and they're not driving. And potentially even data could be sold through the 5G or 6G connections besides data collection. Funny how you talked about this. The same show as the Tesla Autopilot. Yeah, well, Jeremy, we didn't put the two and two together. We didn't not do it. But yeah, at first I was like, no, somebody still has to be, you know, operating the vehicle. But if you are talking true autonomous, you're sitting in the back seat, even if you're sitting in the passenger seat, maybe that does give somebody something else to do.
Sure. Why not? More options, the merrier, as long as there's no motion.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Michael sent an email, and he's been wanting a way to hail an Uber with a phone call. He writes in, he says, I'm not completely blind, but pretty close. There are several incidents when I'm outside and the, you know, sun's not being my friend. I'm trying to order a ride. Having a number and then say, you know, hey, Siri, call Uber. And hopefully the call can just operate like, hi, Michael, are you at address blank and want to be picked up? And you could say, you know, give some direction, you know, give some more specificity, and then get a direction that, hey, John in a red Honda Civic will arrive in 5 minutes. So that would be Michael's ideal interaction with that kind of a system. And Michael also hopes he can record more info at the same
for
time.
For the driver.
So, yeah, for the driver, saying, I'm visually impaired, wearing an orange baseball cap, green jacket, you know, giving some more information and some context. Please come to me instead of me trying to find you. Michael, I love this idea to make that happen. You know, that would be a real big boon for people with a visual and a whole bunch of disabilities. So
me too, Michael. I'm glad you wrote in. When Tom and Allison and I were, you know, kicking this around yesterday, we were like, this will obviously be good for a lot of people. But
yeah,
this is a really good use case of Michael being like, this would help me so much. Instead of having to like navigate an app, you know, whether he's in the sunshine or not, and, you know, and just, you know, having other options is good for accessibility.
Absolutely.
100%.
Well, Dr. Nikki Ackermans, you are great for our accessibility because you tell us all the nice things every time that you're on the show. You always bring the knowledge. Let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
Yes, ma'am. They can find me at NicoleAckermans.com. Pretty simple. And I'm pretty active on Twitter these days still at Ackermans Nicole. So that's it.
Very cool. Well, we're glad to have you today. Come back
and I'm
early
glad to be
and
here.
Often. Also, want to special thank our brand new boss named Alex. Alex just started backing us on Patreon. Thank you, Alex.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Alex. And if money's a little tight right now, believe me, we get it. Consider joining our Patreon for free. Just scroll down past the paid options at patreon.com/DTNS. You'll get monthly updates, things like Roger's column and the Friday GDI, so you can keep up on all the fun.
Indeed. Speaking of patrons, stick around for our extended show, Good Day Internet, where we're going to be talking about the BeepBerry. That's a messaging gadget that uses an old BlackBerry keyboard. What could go wrong? But just a reminder, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. And just a reminder, you know, like I said, we do it every day. Tomorrow we'll be back with Rob Dunwood and Len Peralta joining us. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.